Call it a case of the blind leading the paparazzi.
It is the moment that's important to me, the instant. It's a conscious choice, even though I don't see the object, even if I'm getting a description, I could very well decide not to take that picture.
Pianist Henry Butler has been blind since birth. He's been a photographer for most of his life. Taking pictures is one of his passions, though he's never seen a single image he's shot. Musical moments and pulling the trigger on art. That's what we do. We're fully loaded on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Wednesday, May 27th. Henry Butler is coming up later in the program to play for us. I'm John Hockenberry. Today, I'm in our partner studios at WGBH Boston. Farai Chidea is with us from New York. Good morning, Farai.
Hey, John. Coming up this hour, we've got how Supreme Court justices can pack a lifetime of surprises and headaches into the presidencies of those who pick them. Plus, when the government can tell you how to take care of your kids, when can they? How much? We're going to find out. All this and more ahead, but first these headlines.
And in the headlines, barring a last-minute surprise, General Motors takes another step toward bankruptcy court later today. GM is expected to announce that not enough of its bondholders will bite on a deal to swap debt for a share in the company. That all but guarantees the automaker will file for Chapter 11. Making a deal with bondholders was a key condition for avoiding bankruptcy. GM's need for cash means the U.S. government stake in the company will likely grow. Chrysler is already bankrupt and has a key court hearing today. The car company will officially ask a court for final permission to sell itself to Fiat. Before the Italian automaker can close the deal, the court will hear from various parties opposing the sale, including dealers, investors, and former employees. Farai?
A new survey shows most leading economists predict the recession will end this year. I say woohoo to that. Now, many even think economic growth could be back by the third quarter. This is from a survey of leading forecasters, the National Association for Business Economics. They're quick to note that even when the technical recession is over, we will still feel effects, including job losses. The California Supreme Court ruling upholding gay marriages has gay marriage ban has protesters in the street.
Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you!
Gay rights supporters in San Francisco, after the court upheld Proposition 8, gay marriage foes are praising the court's decision on the November referendum. Thousands of same-sex couples married before the ban kicked in. Well, their marriages are still in force. More on all this in a conversation right after the headlines.
Also, more on President Obama being on the road, plugging his Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor. And North Korea has a new saber rattle out this morning. It's threatening, quote, strong military measures, unquote, if South Korea stops and searches any North Korean ships. The Dow gets going at 84.73 today. The S&P starts trading over 900 at 910. When is personal freedom medical neglect? Have you felt social pressure in your own parenting? What is society's interest in regulating parental decisions? Everything from corporal punishment to experimental life-saving therapies. Tell us your stories at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
I'm Farai Chidea, and this week we have seen plenty of news, including the nominee of the first Latina for Supreme Court justice. We'll have more on that shortly, but first, yesterday, the California State Supreme Court upheld Proposition 8, a ballot initiative banning same-gender marriage. It did leave a loophole saying that thousands of gay men and lesbians who already are married remain so. Janine Rizzo married her partner in September. She was one of the plaintiffs in the case, and she spoke to us yesterday, shortly after the decision.
When the announcement was made, I felt just a pang in my heart that we were now separated from our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters, and also separated as being less than equal to all straight couples because it wasn't a universal decision. So I took no comfort in hearing that the 18,000 marriages were intact.
So that is a truly odd decision where you could be a legally married gay couple in California, but have many other friends who were gay couples who they just missed a deadline and that was it, and they may never be able to do it again. Is that really the state of play, John?
Well, it's a situation that you could call separate but pretty much equal, according to the decision by the court. You have people who were married and people who can't get married now. And what the court tried to say was all that's missing is the label marriage.
In addition to being John, our friend with one name, you actually have two, John Schwartz, and you write on legal issues for our partner, The New York Times. I was completely fascinated by what it took to get us here. You had Gavin Newsom, newly elected as mayor, saying, sure, go ahead and get married. People rushed to City Hall. Then it was like, no, you can't get married. Then it was like, okay, you can get married, the state Supreme Court. This has been an incredible smash-up between different branches of government trying to take control over who can be married. Is this typical of how many different branches of government have a say in marriage?
Well, it's typical for California, where the initiative process is relatively easy to get rolling. And of course, things started well before, as you said, things started well before with Newsom in the California gay marriage fight. But when you've got a situation where people can come up with an initiative and bat it back and then go to court and bat it back, it starts to look like those tennis matches in the movies where everybody's just looking left, right, left, right. And it's going to keep going because the activists were saying yesterday for same-sex marriage, were saying, well, the answer here is to go back and do our own initiative.
Well, John, what is the doctrine in California? Does a ballot initiative have constitutional standing? Is it legislative, just like what would happen in the legislature? Why does the batting back and forth happen at all?
Well, when you pass an initiative, the Proposition 8, which was passed in November, amended the state constitution. And this is a power of the people since the early 1900s in California. They've done this hundreds of times, once it starts, it never seems to end there.
Okay, let's think a little bit about the possible implications of this. This year, or this session, term of the Supreme Court, we've seen a lot of cases pertaining to civil rights. Do you think that in the future, when, for example, you could have a Justice Sotomayor, if she's confirmed, that somehow this issue of gay marriage will make its way to the court?
Well, it depends. You know, states deciding state issues generally stay within the states. But there are going to be a lot of permutations of this, a lot of decisions on all kinds of grounds. This issue is rolling through the states, and so you could see court challenges heading to the Supreme Court. There's a challenge going on right now to the National Defense of Marriage Act. Any of these could, through some way or another, find their way into the federal system. So you could see it, and it could come up before a court.
Well, John, step back for a second. I mean, it seems like there's three doctrines emerging here. There's the question of a civil union versus marriage, and the question whether that has some sort of civil libertarian standing at the national level. There's also a doctrine of states' rights, whether a state can regulate the way people get married or hitched up in their state, and whether that has to be nationally recognized. And finally, there's just the general basic issue of discrimination, where people of a particular sexual orientation, feel that they're disadvantaged in some way. And does that have national standing? How are these three developing separately?
Well, the states' rights issues are coming up all the time. Especially in opposition to a lot of the policies of the Obama administration, you're seeing a resurgence in at least people talking about stuff like that. But when people fighting for same-sex marriage fight, they generally bring up the equal protection arguments. They bring up the equality issues, and you see these in conflict in cases all over the country. I don't see how to predict where it's going.
Well, earlier we heard from Jeannie Rizzo, who is a plaintiff who got married in September 2008 to her partner, Polly Cooper. Now here's a little bit from Polly.
And that is, it's a sort of taking something away from everybody, and that I don't think that would make anybody happy. I do think, though, that there is a separation of church and state where you can have marriages at City Hall, civil marriage versus religious marriage. And I don't think that giving up the word marriage is where the argument is.
And yet some people have argued, including some theologians, and we'll talk more about that later, that there should be something that is marriage, which is a church function, and that a civil union, or as a theologian we will talk more about says, an espousal would be a state function. Is that something that you think could become a future case, or how does that distinction between civil unions and marriages play into the debate we have on our hands?
Well, it's interesting. If you go back to the March hearing at the California Supreme Court, the justices were toying with the idea of getting the state out of the marriage business altogether, that perhaps equal protection might argue that if you get married by the state, then it doesn't get called marriage no matter what you do. And if you get married in a church, that gets to be called marriage. And so it's a clever way to address the problem. It's not a way that would satisfy a lot of people. And this is the problem with the same-sex marriage issue. You can come up with intellectual frameworks for this all you want, but people have a deep emotional tie over generations to the word marriage. People who want to, as they say, protect marriage feel intensely strongly about it. People who want to get married want to get married.
They just want the gifts.
We've noticed, yeah.
But champagne buckets, I mean, what do you do with them?
You give them to the next person who gets married. No, in all seriousness, though, when people think about marriage these days, they often have a bittersweet sense of risk because so many marriages do end badly. And there's something quite poignant about one group of people saying, I want to get married, as America as a whole deals with the battles over what it takes to keep a good marriage together. What is the interest of the state? Is there any compelling interest that the state has that is the same now as it was when, this country was first founded, in marriage as an institution that's part of the social fabric?
Well, if you look at the California cases in same-sex marriages that have fallen apart, and the questions are the questions always. What happens to the children? What happens to child support? How do you deal with this so that, how do you keep order in your society? And on that level, at least, the courts seem to be willing to find that marriage is marriage.
Yes, very much so. We're going to leave it there. Big questions. What happens to before we let you go, though, we'll leave the same.
Actually, John, I have a quick question. You talked a little bit about, and both of you were talking so poignantly, I actually was almost in tears, about the sort of religious implications of marriage. Is it a settled question whether the state has to butt out of religious questions of marriage, John?
Well, the state is sort of knee-deep in this already. The problem is that the state offers a civil union to opposite-sex and same-sex, to opposite-sex people, and in some states now to same-sex people. But we call it marriage. We got in the habit of calling it marriage. And so it's sort of intertwined in our lives.
And do you think that in the future there will be something, and I'm going to just go ahead and take that leap that nobody ever wants to take? People are saying, if you can have a marriage between a man and a man, why can't you have a marriage between a man and five women? Will we ever put that on the plate again, a la, old pre-Mormon doctrine, polyamory?
Well, this goes back to the frameworks, the intellectual frameworks. You can get as clever as you want, but ultimately society sets the limits for us.
All right. Well, we will leave that on the provocative note of what else could be ahead. John Schwartz, New York Times legal analyst, thank you.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.